At Lowe's, our members get more. With the MyLowe's Rewards programs, you can shop member-only deals for your home and business every week. Plus, members earn points on eligible purchases. So what are you waiting for? Join for free today. Lowe's, we help you save. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change. Free standard shipping not available in Alaska and Hawaii. Exclusions and more terms apply.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Memory can be a highly unreliable thing, especially the further back you go. Is your first memory actually a first memory or something you were told but that you now think you remember? And why can't any of us recall being a toddler? Kira Green from UCD is the author of Memory Lane, The Perfectly Imperfect Ways We Remember. Afternoon, Kira.
Hi, Sean. How are you?
Why is it that we just don't remember everything? Is there like a limit in our brain where, you know, would our ears fall off if we remembered everything?
Well, yeah, to an extent. So I suppose your first question there was really about, you know, childhood and why we don't remember everything from our childhood. And there is a period called infantile amnesia where, you know, we just don't form memories from when we're very young. Or really, I should say, we don't form conscious memories from when we're very young. So obviously we are learning and forming memories. I mean, you know, the way that a child learns how to speak or is able to, you know, learn how to put a fork full of peas to their mouth. Obviously, they're forming memories and learning things from one day to the next. But before the age of about two or three, we don't form any conscious memories. So we're not actually able to remember now, oh, yes, that time when I learned to walk. And yeah. In fact, if you do have memories of that, it's very highly unlikely that they're real memories. They're probably false memories.
Yeah, well, that's because I just have a feeling that a lot of people might think they remember something, but they've heard their parents talk about, do you remember the time you fell over in the park? And then they tell that story so much.
Yeah. Or what happens a lot is you'll have seen a photo. So I have a very vivid memory of sitting on my granny's lap when I was probably a year old, and I could picture it. I know what I was wearing. I know what she was wearing. And then years later, I had this memory for a long time. And then years later, I was going through a family photo album and I found the photo of me sitting on my granny's lap. And I realized I had seen that photo many times and I had just constructed this memory of this having happened. But of course, I was far too young to really have that memory.
That's so interesting. And so, but from that point on, though, we still seem to have selective memory. And is there a process our brain is going, well, that's important and that's not important?
Yeah,
to an extent.
And
how does it choose that?
Yeah, so to an extent. So an awful lot of what happens with memory doesn't even start with memory itself. It starts earlier. It starts with attention. So it starts with, you know, when we're out in the world at any given time, there's a huge amount of information that's bombarding us, you know, at any given moment. And we can only pay attention to a certain amount of it. So the very first thing is if you haven't encoded something in the first place because you weren't paying attention to it, then you're not going to remember it. And then so then later on, there's going to be some sort of gaps or some holes in your memory. And then a lot of the time we'll sort of fill in the gaps. We'll fill in the blanks of our memory with sort of what we expect to have happened, what we kind of think might have happened there. Mm. And we'll use all of our past experience to help us kind of figure out, well, what probably happened? What was kind of likely to have happened there? Or we'll use different cues that are in the environment. So somebody might give us a little suggestion about what might have happened. And we'll use that to help fill in the blanks in our memories.
Yeah.
But then as well, like we also, you know, a lot of the experiences in our lives, not every experience we have is this like wonderful, unique memory that we have to hold on to. Like a lot of our memories are really mundane and really repetitive. Like, you know, if you think about like coming to work every morning, right, you know, you get up, you know, you have you do your morning routine, you go out, you lock the door, you walk down the stairs, you get into the car, you start the car, you drive out down the driveway, you turn right, whatever. You know, it's kind of an awful waste, if you like, of your mental resources to record every single detail of every single morning in like incredible detail. So we don't. Essentially, what we do is a lot of the time when we're encoding these kinds of experiences, we kind of have a thing of saying, OK, this has an awful lot in common with previous experiences. So I'm just going to file it away in that framework I have for what every other morning I have has looked like.
Yeah.
It's kind of similar in a way to, do you know, like if you think of like a compression algorithm for like a photo, like, I mean, you know, you're creating like a JPEG out of a photo and it compresses it down. Mm-hmm. And the way it does that is it basically says, right, all of these pixels up here are blue. And rather than coding every single one of those pixels in the sky as blue, we're just going to say this one is the same as all the other ones. Mm. And that, you know, really reduces the amount of kind of storage space required to do it. And we do something similar in our brains. We kind of say, okay, this memory has an awful lot in common. This experience has an awful lot in common with lots of previous experiences. So I'm just going to recognise the commonalities among those and use that as a framework to file this away.
Yeah, like there's a thing that happens on the show that people will say, you know, we're going to do this item today. And I go, I know we've done that before.
Yeah.
Now, invariably, I'm right, but it's 9 years ago.
Yeah.
And I don't know how I remember that. Yesterday, we were talking about some series we did. I can't remember it at all.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
So it's odd that I can remember things and I don't even know why I remember them, and I don't particularly need to remember them. But other people remember other aspects. And
yeah.
The same thing that people will tell stories about events I was at and I don't remember them at all, or I tell stories and they don't remember them.
And they'll have picked out different details than what you would remember, or they'll remember totally different parts of it. And I suppose the key thing to know about memory is that memory is reconstructive. So like what I mean by that is, sometimes when we think about our memories, we tend to think that it's like a hard drive, or if you're a bit older, maybe you think it's like a filing cabinet. And so that, you know, you take your individual experiences, your individual memories, and you file them away and they stay there. And then when you want them, you just have to go and rifle through and find it, and it's still there. But that's not how memory works at all. Like, our memories are actually stored in this very distributed way in networks of connections between neurons all around the brain. And whenever we go to remember something, we're not going into the file and finding it and pulling it out.
Yeah.
We're actively reconstructing it. We're creating the memory.
Yeah.
In the moment.
So the more you think about something, the better chances you remember it.
Well, to some extent. Yeah, yes, to some extent, in that if there's an event you think about a lot, you essentially have a lot more neuronal connections to that memory. So, you know, it's easier to access in some ways. But every time we access a memory and we reconstruct it, we rebuild it, we kind of leave it open for that memory to be altered or distorted. So it's kind of a worrying thought that, like, you kind of say, like, right, if you think about your most cherished memories, the ones you go back to over and over again, they're the ones you access. And every time if we think about a memory as being sort of like locked down when it's kind of stored in these patterns of synaptic connections, every time you retrieve that memory, you unlock it and you make it kind of what we say labile, that it's susceptible to being changed and modified. So the more times you do that, the more chances there are that some kind of elements of distortion creep into that memory, that it becomes changed. You add in some details, you remove some other details, you mix it up with a previous memory, and all the details, kind of all those different similar events, get sort of smushed together in your mind.
Mm.
So you might have this memory that's really, really important to you, but you've mixed up a lot of the details. I can give you an example, actually.
Yeah.
Like, so a lot of people over a certain age will have a very clear memory of where they were in 9/11 when they heard about the 9/11 attacks. And I do too. I was in Rome with my best friend, and we were there. It was like our first adult trip away. You know, we were 18. It was our first trip away. And I have this really, really vivid memory of seeing the planes crash into the towers. And we were in this hostel in Rome, and we'd come downstairs in the morning. We came down to breakfast and everyone was watching the TV, and the TV was hanging up from the ceiling. And we said, oh, what's happening? And they said, oh, well, a plane has flown into the World Trade Center. And everyone's thinking about, well, you know, like, did the pilot have a heart attack or what happened?
Mm.
And then as we watched, the second plane crashed in. So that's all fine. I remember that. And I remember very vividly. Claire remembers it a little bit differently, but that's normal. But the key thing is, I remember this happening in the morning. And that, of course, is because I know that the 9/11 attacks happened at about 9 o'clock in the morning, but I was in Rome and there's a 6 hour time difference. So it was actually about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. But my memory is that it was in the morning. So when I think about that memory and I was retrieving that memory, all the information that I had about 9/11, about the order in which the attacks happened, what time of day it was, all that information sort of got incorporated into my memory every time I retrieved it. And then when that memory gets locked down again, so we say it gets reconsolidated, it's now been changed, but I'm not aware that it's been changed.
Yeah. lots of people have questions for you, can't be possibly answered. Has she a tip on how to get rid of bad memories? Do we tend to remember bad things more than good things?
Actually, no. We tend to remember, on the whole, we tend to have a positivity bias. We tend to remember things more positively than negatively. And we tend to, over time, tweak things so that we have more positive memories of ourselves and of our lives. So, like, we tend to remember, for example, that we did better in school than we really did, or that we're more generous than we were, or we gave more money to charity than we really did. Things like that. We tend to remember ourselves in a nice little halo.
You know that way people will relate a disagreement or an argument they have with somebody and they're always the victor.
Oh, they're always
in the
right.
I said to them. And there's no answer.
And I mean, never let the truth get in the way of a good story, you know? So we do that. But I mean, so in terms of like getting rid of bad memories, I mean, obviously that is a key topic for a lot of people. Is I'm saying in general, we have this positivity bias, but of course people also have very negative, very traumatic memories that will stick with them and can be hard to lose, you know? And there are some approaches that have had some, there's been some evidence around about trying to kind of retrain how you think about the event. And what we do know is what doesn't work is just saying, don't think about it, push it out of your mind. Because it's kind of like that
put
thing.
Put it into your mind. Cheer
up. It's like if I say to you, like, don't think about a pink elephant.
Yes.
Like, what are you thinking about?
I'm looking at one right now, to be honest with you. As you get older, do you forget more? Well, I suppose more things have happened, but your ability to retain information, does that degrade with time?
The pattern of your memory sort of changes a little bit. So some things become better. You have more information. So you, in some ways, you're more resistant to some distortions to your memory because you have more information and more experience to lean on. But in some other ways, your memory can become more easily distorted. And of course, there are age-related changes in memory. But I would, I certainly don't want to minimize that. You know, we obviously people can suffer from dementia and that kind of thing. But one thing that we notice a lot, when I say we, I mean my colleague Gillian Murphy and I, who we work really closely together on a lot of this work, and we wrote this book together. And what we find a lot is that people will come to us and say, I'm having, you know, I keep forgetting things. I forgot someone's name yesterday. I meant to go to the post office and I forgot. Is this a sign that my memory is in trouble? And we'd say, no, that's a sign that you're human.
Yeah, absolutely. Few people texting in claiming they can remember things from when they were three.
Three is kind of around the line. You might, yeah. So a lot of people's earliest memories is around, like the earliest you'd see is maybe about 2.5.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that, like, you know, people often think that, like, oh, I'm going to create these wonderful memories for my child of like some of this incredible experience that I've really curated for them. And probably what they'll remember is like at the time, like that, you know, they got an ice cream and the ice cream fell off, or like the time that, like, you know, somebody like made a joke and it made them laugh. Or like my first memory is of my mother laying out my clothes on my bed, like really mundane stuff.
They remember the sweets they got on the way home from the art gallery,
exactly,
not the art gallery.
So there's no controlling what it is that someone's going to remember. You cannot control that.
Ciara Green is Associate Professor in the School of Psychology in UCD and co-author of Memory Lane, The Perfectly Imperfect Ways We Remember. Ciara, thank you very much.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.